Today on Rockin' the Suburbs. Wait, Patrick, we didn't even start yet. Where are you going? Was it something I said? I am back from Louisville. This is Jim Lenihan. You're listening to Rockin' the Suburbs. But we still don't have Patrick. And here's the reason why. He's still on vacation. And while I was in Louisville, Kentucky, and I visited the Forecastle Festival, I was able to do a number of interviews with musicians. So you're going to hear those interviews starting today. Before that, I want to thank the guest host who filled in while I was in Louisville, Will Pfeiffer, Keith Jacobson and Derek Rica, Mike Snyder and Brett Motif, Jesse Jackson with Justin Steiner and Scott Parks, and just yesterday you heard Mike Wagner. So thanks all you guys for doing that for us. That really did help us out. I hope people enjoyed that. All right, you're not going to want to hear me blather on and on by myself. That's no fun. Let's get to the first interview. This one is a little bit different. This was fun to do. I managed to set up an interview with two guys in the band White Reaper. They are twin brothers. Their names are Nick Wilkerson, who plays the drums, and Sam Wilkerson, who plays the bass. And I set this interview up through their father, Mark Wilkerson, who is a fan of our show. And he has written some rock biographies. We're going to talk about that a little bit in this interview. So the interview is with Nick and Sam of White Reaper, plus their dad, Mark, all together talking about rock and roll family stuff. It's really fun. If you don't know White Reaper, you really should. They have two full albums plus an EP out on Polyvinyl Records. The latest album is called The World's Best American Band. It came out just last year. One of the things we're going to talk about a little bit here is the experience playing at Forecastle. It's a major music festival in Louisville. These guys are originally from Louisville. I mean, they still live there when they're not touring around the country. And so they have a particularly large fan base there, and they were able to play on the main stage and have a really big crowd that was really into their music. Their music, I would say, is I think of it as kind of power pop. It's, you know, guitar based, you know, rock and roll music, and almost kind of modern arena rock in a way. So it worked really well on this main stage setting with so many people there to really cheer them on. So that was great. But one little mishap they had on the stage was Nick had to take a little break. At one point, you could tell from the crowd, you could tell looking up there on stage that he was getting a little overheated. He not looking too good, and he had to leave for a few minutes and come back. So it's rock and roll. One other thing you're going to hear in this interview, they talked about a little bit, was how they got into music, and they played together in a band before White Reaper, a local band in Louisville called The New Mexico. And Tony Esposito, who is the frontman, the singer and guitarist for White Reaper, he was also in that band too. So, enough of me. Let's get to the interview with Nick and Sam Wilkerson of White Reaper, plus their dad, Mark Wilkerson. It's good to see you guys again.
It's good to see you too, man.
Yeah, good to see you.
Thanks for being on the new podcast.
It's no problem. And what's this one called?
So this is called Rockin' the Suburbs.
Oh, yeah. Okay, cool. Nice.
And you guys were on our old show, Dad Rock.
Cool.
And we loved having you on. And it was great to see you play again. But we have a special guest with us on this episode. Please introduce our special guest here.
It's my dad.
It's my dad.
Hey, everybody.
Mark Wilkerson, father of Sam and Nick Wilkerson, who are members of White Reaper.
That's right. He's the reason we exist.
There you go.
He's a cool dad. Much.
Yes, literally. So first of all, before we get into Rock and Roll Family Talk. First, Nick, how are you feeling?
I'm feeling all right. I've just got to... I'm trying to get my shit together, as some might say. And, yeah, I'm just feeling a little queasy. It's hot out here.
Yeah, so what happened during the set?
I didn't really even drink that much last night, but it turns out I was a little hungover this morning, and I didn't think it was as bad as it was until I got up on the stage and started playing drums, and I just kind of had like a heat wave kind of vomiting session. I had to run off stage real quick, and then I just kind of threw up, and then I was better after that.
Nick, let me ask this: where did you vomit?
Where? Right under the stage.
Nice. Yeah. Were the guys like, "You're all right,
two
man,
guys
you're
in
all
like
right,
two
buddy.
Guys in like hammocks"? I'm sure we're like, "Oh man, what's wrong with that guy? Oh man."
So I was hoping there wouldn't be some story tomorrow in the paper that Jason Isbell slipped on an unknown substance backstage.
It was in the grass. It was not. That's not okay. Slip.
Yeah. I think it's kind of perfect that you threw up. I don't see it any other way.
I think it was too, in a weird way. I kind of felt right.
Rock and roll.
Rock and roll.
It felt good.
You all recovered right. Well.
So, Mark, when you see stuff like that, though, do you worry about these guys?
I do. I worried about, I was worried at the very beginning. First of all, Mom and me are both worriers. And Nick wasn't out there helping set up at the very beginning, at least when we were there. So I was wondering where he was. But he seemed like he was fine. But then, yeah, when he got up and came and sat down and then got up again, I was worried that he was going to be able to finish. But you could tell, I mean... When he came back out, he was fine. And it's not like they let up. The first song after he came and sat back down was 4th of July.
Right.
Which is a tough, tough song. It's like the most... It's the White Reaper song. The drum part reminds me the most of Keith Moon, which means Nick's working overtime. I was like, wow, they didn't take it easy on him.
Right. I just kind of, I got it out, and I was like, all right, you idiot. If you don't, play the songs, then everyone's gonna, you know, complain about it, and everyone's gonna be upset about it, and it's gonna suck because then the show ends, and yeah.
You gotta complete the gig.
Gotta complete the show,
but. You're right, though, Mark. I was sitting there thinking, like, take it easy on the guy. Switch up the set list real quick, you know?
That's not how these guys work.
All right, so I want to ask you, first I want to talk, Mark, real quickly. Tell us about your rock and roll credentials. You've written a couple of rock biographies, right?
Yep. I grew up in England and was a big, big, and still am, Who fan. Pete Townsend is my musical... idol, and it kind of transcends, like, music to me and music to these guys is not entertainment, it's life, you know. And Quadrophenia in particular was and still is just like that's the pinnacle. Pete has meant a lot to me. His music meant a lot to me from my adolescence all the way to now. And as a fan, as a hobby, I kind of wrote about him just for myself, because there were no good biographies. There was one that came out in 97 that I hated and that Pete hated. One thing led to another. I self-published a biography of Pete with no firsthand information at all back in like 05. Sent a copy to Pete just by complete and utter chance. The day before a Who convention in London, ran into him and introduced myself, and he said, "Let's do an interview." And 6 months later, or however long it was, we did an interview. I completely that opened the gates to a bunch of other interviews. That led to a conventional published book that came out in 08 with interviews with a bunch of other people, Pete's brother Simon, and a foreword by another big Who fan, Eddie Vedder. And that led to another book. Eddie asked me to do a book or to help out on a book about Pearl Jam that was already in the works. And then that led, that was the PGA 20 book, and I did the research for that. That came out in 2011. And then at the time that Ed was writing the foreword to my Pete Townsend book, he was writing a song for a movie that Phil Donahue and Ellen Spiro were doing called Body of War, which was about Thomas Young, soldier who suffered catastrophic injuries in Iraq and spoke out before and after the war. And I used to be in the Army, so that kind of struck a particular chord with me, and I got to know Thomas and hung out with him and went to his house and interviewed him and sat by his bedside. He was quadriplegic the last few years of his life, and got to know him and wrote a book about him, and that was the last one I did.
Okay. So for you guys growing up, were you, you know, Mark, you mentioned sort of like music isn't just entertainment, it's life. What was it like growing up with this guy as a dad?
Just like listening to cool music that we liked, remember, that we ended up liking.
I remember mainly for some reason the things that I remember the most are like when our dad used to watch like music documentaries, and I have like, I remember vividly you watching the really big Who documentary.
Kids Are All Right.
Yeah, I remember you watching that, and I remember you watching the Sex Pistols documentary.
Filth and the Fury.
And I just remember like the movies that you used to play, and I remember being like, what? Like, as a kid, you're just like, kind of freaks you out a little bit. You're like, what is going on? But I also, after that, we started playing a lot of Tony Hawk's Pro Skater. And I remember you got the soundtrack for that, and we listened to like a bunch of different bands from that game.
It's a lot of great,
yeah,
great music on Pro Skater, you know?
Yeah, that's like,
that I didn't grow up with because I grew up in England. Bad Religion.
Yeah,
so Kennedys.
I feel like that might have like given you a lesson on American like
big
punk
time.
You know, I don't know.
Yeah, just growing up, just like listening to Keith Moon, and yeah, I mean, my dad likes other bands than just The Who, but I like The Who is probably one of my favorite bands too. So it's kind of, that's kind of weird that how that happened.
The music your dad liked, how much of that, I mean, you already alluded to this, how much of that was an influence on you guys and the music that you ended up creating?
Yeah, I would say so. Or wait, sorry, what was it? What did you say?
I was how much of an influence was that
how
on the
much
music?
Influence?
Yeah.
For me, I mean, like he showed me, like, you never really like showed us, like, well, like later on you were like, check this out, but it would just be like background music at first, and like that's, I think that kind of just integrated into my brain, and then I kind of went went our own way from there, like went down that
part of me is like of. I grew up with seeing all the Who stuff, and then I kind of rebelled and I listened to NoFX for like 2 years, and then I realized they're like the worst band of all time. So then I went back and I realized that Pete Townsend is actually amazing and Roger Daltrey
is
amazing.
Yeah, definitely took a while to like appreciate classic rock, because I never, like, growing up,
I feel like when we went through puberty, we went through puberty and we realized that actually all the stuff that our dad likes is cool. So,
but you still went off on your own. You went off on your own tangents. Like, oh, Sam went off on his kind of West Coast punk thing,
and I was into like hardcore music.
Yeah,
like,
you were into a lot of experimental stuff too, like Lightning Bolt.
Yeah,
and then a lot of really like psychedelic, like Sid Barrett era Pink Floyd, which is not something that I like. I got into Lightning Bolt a little bit. I can take a little bit of that, but so they really have their own. I think I would like to think I kind of showed them that music is, we don't view music as entertainment in our family. But then they took that and went off on their own, in their own directions with it.
Did you have like a big record collection around and stuff like that?
Not really.
Yeah.
I mean, I started buying, like, I remember getting records from the internet when I was like probably 17 or 18, and I thought, just because, like, you know, the novelty of it. But then I kind of got into it later in my life. But I also, relating to your earlier question about like your influences on us, I remember listening to the Stranglers because of you, and I think that like influenced me a lot too,
which is funny because I know very little of the Stranglers other than Golden Brown, which I love that song.
I just remember you playing that a lot, and I thought that was a really good song.
A temptress through the ages, she's heading west from far away, stays for a day, never a frown with Golden Brown.
So when did you guys start playing? When did you start on drums? When did you start on bass?
Dad, did I ask for a drum set on that Christmas, or did you kind of just give me one?
I'm pretty sure you asked, and this is a I was a frustrated drummer that could we always lived in apartments growing up, and I could never get a drum set. I was never allowed to get a drum set, so I think I may have forced a drum set on Nick, or he may have asked, but
I think you just got me one.
But it was a first
it was like a Walmart,
drum
it was a Walmart
set from Target, I think it was.
No, Target,
and he was probably about 11, right?
I was 10. 7.
Oh, really? Okay, way younger than I thought, and it was destroyed very quickly, not because he mistreated it, but just because he played the heck out of it. So we got you a Pearl jazz drum set, like a smaller.
Yeah, kind of slowly upgraded every Christmas, like maybe like a drum. Then one year I got like a better drum set. It was awesome.
So I guess 7 or 8 then. And then you started, Sam.
I started with you guys gave me a guitar, and then I took it. I mean, did I choose that?
I think so.
I don't remember.
I think you probably just played dad's at first.
I think that I just started playing your guitar that sat around, and then I think you guys got me a guitar. And I still prefer to play guitar, honestly. It's my favorite instrument. I think guitar is more fun to play than bass, but bass is fun because you don't really have... It's a lot easier, and when you're playing live, you don't really have to, like, think about what you're doing as much as if you were to play guitar. And there's no, like, there's not really many solos, so it's great.
You can do more poses, too.
Yeah, exactly. You saw a lot of those today.
Was there a point at which, Mark, you thought, hey, these guys could really do something with music?
Yeah, I think so. You know, we put them in this thing that there's a place here in Louisville called Mom's Music. It's a music shop, and they do a rock school thing where you take your kids and they practice together every week or every twice
did
a week.
I think we did lessons from before that.
Yeah, and they took lessons and stuff. But we got you in rock school, and that was like your first band exposure. And it was like, I don't know if they're going to like this or not, but they do like a couple of covers, like Green Day or whatever else you did at the end of whatever,
like,
10
you
weeks.
You pick like a couple songs for you and your randomly assembled band to perform live in front of an audience at the end of the season or whatever.
The more I think about it, when you're a kid and you do something like that, that's a lot more stressful than just like playing music with your friends.
Well, yeah, because
it
kind of
sucks. I don't know if I recommend it.
But the thing is, you guys did that, and to answer your question, like, I guess with that and with lessons too, you either take it from there and develop a passion and it just is self-propelled, or you drop it and it move on to something else. And they both took off, and they were both in a band early on. The New Mexico was you were what, 12? I mean, they were very, very young.
We were 13 or 14, and we started a hardcore band. Me and Nick and Tony, that's the singer of White Reaper, and... Ryan played bass for a second, but I think mainly it was just me, Nick, Tony on bass, and then our friend Adam on the guitar.
It was like a Minor Threat ripoff band, and that was the first real band of starting to getting dropped off at shows and like being around like 30 to 40 year old dudes and chicks, and just kind of like being around like older people. And kind of like seeing how they acted.
I think that broke the seal.
What? Yeah.
Broke the seal.
Oh, yeah. That's going to like this venue in Louisville called Skull Alley. It definitely is what started us off. Yeah.
Now, was Dad like driving you to shows and stuff like that?
Yeah, he did a couple times.
Yeah?
Our sister, too.
And was he supportive?
Oh, yeah.
All right.
We weren't allowed to tour until we graduated from high school, but I kind of understand that.
This here dad is a great dad.
It sounds
You're
like
a great
that.
Dad.
Did you guys practice at your house?
Yeah.
So did you?
The New Mexico was there. Yeah, our practice pad was in the basement.
Okay.
Sam was the lead singer. Nick was the drummer. Tony from White Reaper was the bass player, and a kid named Adam, who's out in California now, right? He was the guitarist, and they were really good. I mean, they might knock it a little bit now, I don't know, but they were very, very good, and they had a good little following. And the thing that really kind of killed them, I think, was Skull Alley shut down,
It was just like all ages DIY venue in Louisville, and it was
one of the only places they could play.
There is like to this day still not really any all ages venues. So you have to, unless it's like a super early show and it's like, you know, like a huge pain.
But there was a record store here called Ear Ecstasy.
Yep,
that was like legendary. And they used to do live showcases of bands. The New Mexico played at Ear Ecstasy, and that was not an easy gig to get. And they played it, and they packed the place. And you guys were probably 14.
Wow. So there was some sense early on that maybe they could really do something with this.
Yeah.
Getting back to the rehearsing in the basement. So I think any parent who allows that to happen on a regular basis is a true hero, you know, to budding musicians, right?
Yes. Yeah.
Drums are so loud. Yeah, you can turn amps down, but unless you got one of those electronic drum sets, you can't turn that down.
I will say, though, Tony's house, when White Reaper used to practice in the basement of Tony's house, their house was, like, it was incredibly insulated, and you couldn't hear it at all upstairs, seriously at all.
Yeah, so I can say, when White Reaper started up, things kind of gravitated over to Tony's house, and we didn't really complain about that.
And so how old were you guys then?
Tony and I graduated from high school, and
I might have been 18, 19.
We went to, or it was like around, yeah. Around
you graduated in 2012.
Yeah, it was around two. It was like 2012, and then like the summer of 2012, I think on the 4th of July or something, Tony and Ryan got together and like wrote like two songs just randomly, because that's what they would do. They would just like go write songs in his basement. And then Tony and I went to college together for one semester at Middle Tennessee State University. I think that fall break, we made a demo, because he just kind of write songs in his head. So we just, yeah, and then we named the band, because we found like a white skeleton at a Halloween Express store, and the tag said White Reaper on it. So that's where the band name comes from.
All right.
Yeah. And that's when it started.
So what did you go to college to study?
I think we're just kind of like, oh, you go to high school. When you get out of high school, you got to go to college. And then we were like, what's cool that we can go to college for? Audio engineering and like recording. So that was a good school to do that at. But we realized, I don't want to record bands. I want to be in a band.
Right. And so you spent a lot of time writing music, like you said.
I spent a lot of time just staying up all night and then sleeping and not going to classes and just being an idiot.
So you go there for just one semester?
Yep. Dropped out and then started the band.
And so, Dad, how'd you feel about that?
You know, I went straight in the Army after I graduated high school. And I don't know if I had the, if I would have had the discipline, if I went straight to college, if I would have succeeded either. I went afterwards. I got my master's later on, but it was part-time after work, one class at a time. It didn't surprise me, and I wasn't really disappointed or anything like that. It was fine. I knew they had a passion and they were going for it.
Okay, my thanks to those guys. Thanks in particular to Mark Wilkerson for setting that up. As you could hear on that interview, it was done in sort of a media area and the Forecastle Festival grounds, and so there was a lot of background noise. I did my best to clean that up, but you know, it's one of those deals. It's kind of a noisy environment, and again, rock and roll. So tomorrow we are going to hear more from the guys from White Reaper. You can find us on all the big podcast platforms, as you know. If you have any comments you want to make about White Reaper, Forecastle, anything music-related, email us rock@suburbspod.com or hit us up on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram @suburbspod or call the Suburban Party Line 612-440, and this is Patrick's part, 1984. And if you get a chance, also please rate and review our podcast on Apple Podcasts /iTunes. That really would help us out, and we haven't gotten any ratings and reviews in a little while, so this is your chance, people. All right, so tomorrow, more with White Reaper. Later in the week, you're going to hear an interview with a friend of White Reaper and a guy who's out there just really killing it on stage. He's a garage rocker. His name is Ron Gallo. All right, let's get out of this. It's Rock in the Suburbs. I'm Jim Lenihan. Patrick Foster will be back soon. And at least I'll talk to you tomorrow.
Turns out I was a little hungover this morning,